Says, hey,
Definitely
if you're
live.
joining us, we are going to give a few minutes for people to join. But while we're doing that, my name is David Pinckney. I'm sitting here in Concord, New Hampshire, and it's my privilege to be a husband, a father, a pastor of River Grace Church, and I'm also a strategist for the Rural Collective, which is part of Acts 29's diversity initiative. Joining me, well, I guess it's this afternoon here in the States, but in evening in Scotland is Pete Rennie. Glad you're with us, Pete.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me, David. Glad to be here. It's always a
Yeah,
pleasure to
and
chat to you.
yeah. So, a little bit of an introduction here. First of all, just to this broadcast, this podcast, whatever we call it, we're naming it Gospel Nobodies. It's and I want to tell you a little bit about that, the story of that name. But our whole intention is to provide encouragement and connectivity and resourcing for guys who are called to plant in obscure, forgotten, small places around the globe. And so our hope is that as we record these podcasts, that they would be a source of strengthening for brothers and sisters who are serving Jesus in places that nobody knows about. And so anyway, so how do we come up with the name Gospel Nobodies? That's why we're going to talk to Pete, because in September of 2018, I was on my way to Sheffield, England, to meet with a number of other rural Acts 29 pastors who are in the mix to begin what would become the Rural Collective. And on my way over, I stopped to see John Irvine in Rathfarnham, Ireland. And so, and John's an Acts 29 pastor in his hometown of Rathfarnham, a small town of 2,500. And we one evening we're sitting in a pub with with John and an elder and another leader, and the leader had just I think a month or two before had been in Liverpool, England, to hear Johnny Donnie Griggs and Small Town Jesus. But his big takeaway from that was meeting a rural pastor, and he was, couldn't remember his name, couldn't remember where he's from. But he was this guy in the pub was just struck by this rural pastor's just testimony to be happy to be a gospel nobody for the fame of Christ. And that just struck me. And it so I started this role as in with the Rural Collective and got to travel all around the globe. And I kept repeating this story of that those who are called to rural places are gospel nobodies. We serve in obscurity, we'll die in obscurity, and that's okay because we're doing the will of the Lord. So fast forward to late June of 2019, and my daughter and I are visiting Pete and Anne Rennie in Inverness, Scotland. And which is I you call it the regional city, the capital city of the Highlands,
Highland Capital, yeah.
yeah, Highland Capital. And I was telling him this story, and Pete sheepishly hung his head and said, "I said that." So if you like the title Gospel Nobodies, I'm introducing you to its source. And so thank you, Pete,
I probably
for
stole it from someone. It's
you
probably not
probably.
mine. So if you know who said it before me, then take it. But I just threw the comment away and yeah, thought nothing more of it.
Yeah, you threw it away in Liverpool, and I heard it in Rathfarnham, and now we repeat it over and over again. And now we've named the podcast after it, and maybe we'll only get two podcasts and it will die, but that's okay because it's okay to be gospel nobodies.
Yeah, exactly.
Pete, tell me a little bit about yourself, your journey, calling to plant a church in Inverness. Tell us a little bit about Inverness in the Highlands.
Yeah, so I'm born and raised in Inverness. I'm grew up here and went and was just finishing high school, went and worked in Aberdeen, a city about 100 miles east of here, with Youth for Christ. And during that year, really sensed a call into ministry. So I went to Glasgow to do management and economics, and transferred out of that after a year and did theology degree. And just while involved in ministry there, and a heart for evangelism and how you reach Scotland, really saw church planting as a way of doing that, of being able to go and reach people. So my wife and I were kind of got involved with a Baptist church in Renfrew, and were sent from there a few years later to plant up in Inverness. You always get asked, you're on a rural podcast, Inverness, is that rural? Is that small? You're at a small town Jesus conference, is that small town? And the answer is kind of yes and no. So Inverness has a population of about 60,000, was one of the fastest growing places in Europe in the early 2000s. In some sense it's growing, and it's not a small place, but it's definitely rural. So Inverness is, as we've said, the capital of the Highlands. The Highlands is a third of Scotland's landmass. I think it's about 10% of the UK. And landmass the size of Belgium, has a population of 235,000. So 4% of Scotland live in a third of the land. So I guess a way of comparing it is Belgium, I think, has a population of about 11.5 million, in the same land space that the Highlands has a population of 235,000. Very rural, although Inverness is probably the main place in there. 60,000 of those 235 live in Inverness. But outside of that, it's just all small towns and villages just some beautiful places, some really broken places, some great churches, and some remnants of previous history, previous gospel glory. Yeah, there's lots of small towns, small places that need healthy local churches. So, yeah, we're part of here, and we've got a real burden to be part of what God's doing in the Highlands of Scotland.
Yeah, so when my daughter Abby and I were visiting, and by the way, she says hi to your dog Winston. She fell in love with Winston. What is Winston, an Irish setter or something like that?
He's a cocker spaniel, but he's
a
from
cocker spaniel.
He is from Ireland.
Okay, imported an Irish dog. Okay,
a four-year-old spaniel. So,
yeah. So you had this. You were talking about thinking in direction of Inverness, 100 miles each direction. There are all these villages, correct?
Yeah. So you basically have Inverness, and then the next major kind of population center is either Aberdeen, which is 100 miles to the east and takes about 3 hours to drive, or I guess you've got Perth, which is similar size to Inverness, which is 100 miles south. And then if you go west, you've got Fort William, and north, you just have the north coast, and you've got Orkney and Shetland, and then the next stop's Norway. So our vision as a church, Living Hope, is a church we planted. It's be 5 years old in September. We're a small church, about 40 adults in membership, and we really have a heart to our 100-year vision, as you speak about, is to see churches planted and be part of planting churches 100 miles in every direction from Inverness.
You mentioned 100-year vision. I'm going to give credit to Stephen Whitmer, the author of A Big Gospel for Small Places. I heard him say that, and it really liberates us from the sense of if we don't get things done in 5 years, we still have time. Should the Lord put off his return, which I'm sure you and I would find if he returns before this podcast ends. So in planting in your hometown, what has been the positive of that and the negative of that?
I think positives of that have been that you we obviously knew the culture, knew people here, was able to get involved in, had a lot of connections straight away. So it was really a parachute plant. But we plugged in with a local church up here and have planted out into the west of Inverness. I think what was helpful was we had a real understanding of Inverness, where someone who was an outsider wouldn't have had. So we really spoke to a lot of local churches and wanted to plant in partnership with churches. And then we saw the west kind of suburb in which we have planted was where there's a lot of growth happening. So there's about 800 new houses going up with little gospel witness. Obviously no gospel witnesses amongst all these new houses. So churches were able then to kind of, in partnership, guide our vision towards where we planted in Inverness that would complement rather than compete with other local churches. So I think that was a massive positive. And so our core team was sent out from other local churches in Inverness who saw the vision for church planting and sent people to come and support us. So that was a really positive to that. I guess the negatives are that you're known in Inverness, and that there's people already have preconceived ideas of who you are growing up and those kind of things. I think that puts, that can put barriers up as well. But no, overall, it's been a huge positive.
And, you know, Pete, I was really impressed visiting with you, the network, the small network of planters and potential planters that that you're a part of. Chris Davidson, who's part of Acts 29, are in the process of trying to plant in the one of the schemes of Inverness. And then Kenny Rogan, who is in the process with Acts 29 down in Aviemore, which is probably about a half hour south.
Yeah, half hour, 40 minutes south of us.
Yes, south of you, a town of about 3,000. And I was just so heartened by this. You're kind of suburbs. Chris is in the city. Kenny's been called to this small town. And yet the bond that you guys share is really, really pretty. I guess beautiful.
So I think that's been a real encouragement to us, and that there hasn't been much Acts 29 presence up here up until a couple of years ago. And Chris and Catherine moved up, and they're planting with 20 schemes and involved with Acts 29 through Church in Hard Places, just 5 or 10 minutes away from us, which has been great. So getting to know them and being able to partner with them. And then, yeah, Kenny Rogan, as you said, moved up, must have been a year and a half or so ago now, into Aviemore. It's just a town of 5,000 people. So that's been really great. And then we've got outside of, we started to meet and there's someone near Aberdeen, like Graham and Tinica Wintour, a couple there planting into Balmedy, which is a town about 2,000 just north of Aberdeen. So they've kind of connected in as well. They've done assessment through Acts 29 and are going through that process. And then we've got a couple called Josh and Shonda Hamilton who are with us at the moment, but looking to plant next town over from us, a town of about 10,000. Just to the east. So there's really, in the last couple of years, I guess five different couples who've been able to, it's really building that brotherhood and sisterhood that I guess in some sense we'd been missing from being only Acts 29 guys in this area. So that's been a real encouragement. And I think particularly Chris and Catherine, I think, who've just got a really important role to play in that. So much of the Highlands, it's beautiful. Some of the most beautiful part of scenery in the world. I think Jeremy Clarkson had done a grand tour episode up here, and he said that the northwest of Scotland was his favourite place in the whole world. And you've obviously had you've got massive wealth of what was it, Madonna and Guy Ritchie got married here a few years ago, and all those big golf courses that people come in from all over the world. You've got the Loch Ness Monster, just 10 minutes away from us.
Yeah, we went and saw.
I think Abby sailed on a boat for hours. I think did she see him? I think she said she did.
Oh, several times she said.
But those villages and small places are actually, a lot of them are essentially schemes where there's real, there's real wealth and beauty, but there's also real brokenness and addiction and deprivation and all the social issues that go with that. So I know Chris and Catherine really want to see their scheme as being a kind of church that then can plant out other schemes across the Highlands, which is so important. So I think that's been a real encouragement, excitement for Anime myself.
And before I ask you or have you ask a further question on that sort of sense of fraternity or brotherhood, sisterhood you have with those five couples, let me just say that if you're watching and you have a question or a comment and you want Pete to speak to it, feel free to type that in the comments there, and I think we'll end up seeing that. If not, we'll just ramble on. Our goal is to make this a meaningful half hour. So this idea that you're now linked up with about five other couples, and then ironically, we had a contact from what island is that? North?
Orkney.
Orkney, yeah. Orkney. And had a contact, a church planter up there contact us looking to potentially connect. And it's so helpful, I think, to be able to, you already have this brotherhood, this sisterhood. How, for guys who don't have that, what encouragement could you offer them?
Yeah, I guess, I guess finding anyone in the area who does, who's similar and can come alongside and spend time with you and encourage you in that. But then I guess we've seen that a lot over the last few months, haven't we, how powerful technology can be. I think so Acts 29 and the Rural Collective, obviously having that focus on smaller places where there is, you're going to be more isolated and forgotten. But then the month, I think there's regularly stuff going on through online, through the Rural Collective and connecting with you and others. I guess there's principles that are true of gospel ministry all around the world. And I think what I found in Acts 29 as well is as soon as you find out someone else is in Acts 29, there is that connection. You kind of get each other and you fit. So I think plug into the Rural Collective and what they're doing. And I mean, the prayer that you might credit to someone else, but I heard from you, was just to pray for laborers well, I guess you can credit it to Christ, can't you? Take it back. But you kind of talking about that specifically for other laborers within the vineyard.
Praying,
intentionally seeking what you can do, and making that a priority if you can.
I think I might be famous for quoting people like Pete Rennie, Stephen Whitmer, and Jesus. So I do think, and if you're isolation is one of the challenges of rural planting.
Yeah.
And then having a sense of gospel centrality and being of the reformed conviction that God is sovereign over everything, including the salvation of mankind. That looking for that fraternity, if it's not there, I do urge you to take what Jesus said seriously and pray the Lord of the harvest send workers. Mm-hmm. We are now like in New Hampshire where we are, there was only one other, well, no, there was no other, I didn't have guys in New Hampshire I could go to. I'd be tripping down to Boston, which is about 70 miles south of here. But now we're planting our second, or involved with planting our second church. And we've got now this brotherhood of people God has sent here. So I urge guys not to give up on that or become discouraged in your isolation, and pray that God sends more laborers to be brothers and sisters in the task. I'm looking to see if any questions have popped up here so far. I'm not seeing any. Maybe with that, Just a little biographical side note here. So you and Anne are expecting your first child here in a few weeks, right?
Yeah. So a month yesterday. We're anytime, I guess. We're bracing ourselves, starting to get excited. It feels very imminent after a lot of waiting. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, Pete, that's part of church growth, right? We add to the church daily. Those who are not just being saved, but those being born.
Yeah, we'll take it.
we will take it. Let's see what we got here. No questions yet, so we've got some time.
Explain everything so thoroughly.
But either that or nobody's watching, and that's okay.
Well, I think my wife is. So, Anne, you could ask a question for us.
Yeah, Anne, you could post a question, or correct Pete where he might have misquoted something.
Yeah.
So you've been planted now 5 years, about 40 adult members. You've seen God build this network up of you mentioned five couples, and I got to meet at least the guys. I did meet Kenny's wife, Leslie. Other things that you've seen God do in the last 5 years that you are encouraged by?
Yeah, I think a lot of our stuff has just been, it's been a slow plod. I think it's Bonhoeffer, isn't it, that talks about discipleship being a long obedience in the right direction. I think church planting is sometimes just a long plod, a glorious slog in the right direction. So I think we've just been, probably the things that have encouraged me most is just seeing growth in other people, seeing people really just slowly growing. And I think I've learned a lot of that myself. So I had 6 weeks where I was kind of flat out on my back with a hip problem, couldn't do anything. And just lying flat out when the church is 2 years old and very vulnerable. And I think I kind of felt like a lot of pressure at that time to be like, we need to grow a church and we need to be a success, and big and fast equals success. And so just learning that in myself, that when you're sitting down on a couch and can't do anything, you really have to learn to trust that Jesus builds his church. And I remember thinking the first Sunday the church was meeting, just sensing God saying, I'm going to build my church up while you sit down. And really seeing the growth in people as I was completely out of the game for 6 weeks. I felt like that probably in me is where I've seen the most God just work in my heart and release a kind of pressure valve on what does success mean, and how do you get this moving, and how do we move quickly, and how do we get big, into actually being content to trust that Jesus is building his church and to trust him with that. And I think I've learned a lot of lessons through
that. You nailed a good theological conviction. We have to go into church planting, at least I think with the humble reality that Jesus said, I will build my church. I don't need you. I want to use you. And then to quote a quote that has been hanging around my head for about, oh goodness, it's got to be 25 years now. But I heard a conference speaker once say, the only church you can really build is the one that meets in your heart. And I found that to be super helpful, because I've watched as in my life wrestling with my own struggle with traditionalism, pragmatism, the last decade, egotism, like why isn't the church bigger, and you know, and that sort of sense that, am I doing something wrong? How can I be more effective? And certainly those are fair questions, but when we put our head on the pillow at night, the church belongs to Jesus. He loves it far more than we do. And our task is to be faithful over the long haul.
Totally. I think, I had that focus at the start thing. What do we do to make this quicker? How do we grow this quicker? What can I do better? Look at how come they're growing? How do I, instead of learning to look, and so you kind of move towards pragmatism rather than gospel principles. And actually, it's Jesus' church, so we'll build it according to Jesus' method. And so, I mean, prayer is one of the least pragmatic things you can think of, isn't it? But just seeing, I mean, when I was on the couch, I was like, the only thing I can do is pray. And actually just seeing God answer prayer really clearly day after day for 6 weeks just has taught me it. And I think hopefully that comes through in how I minister within the church. And I think that is probably one of the biggest lessons and things I've changed. And just growing principles over pragmatism. And just a reminder of that. I would never have said pragmatism is the way to go, but in my heart, you can be pulled that way.
Oh, sure.
In the same way, I'd always said, oh, Jesus builds his church. But at a functional level, those 6 weeks forced me to actually put into practice what I said I believed. And I think I learned a lot just with patience with people and letting God worry. I just worry about trajectory and God worries about speed. That idea of just being able to trust him has allowed me, hopefully, to lead in a more gracious, gentle, gospel way with others.
Sure. I love that. I'm going to quote you on that. I know you got it from somebody else probably, but I worry about the trajectory and let God worry about the speed. Ironically, those weeks you were laying flat on your back, I think that might have been the spring of 2017. I was in a meeting with Donnie Griggs and some others. He was building a 10-month cohort. You were supposed to be there, but you couldn't because you had that.
Yeah. I missed a trip to North Carolina.
Yeah. Hey, there are a couple questions here. Will Balsh, Basham from my hero from one of my heroes from West Virginia. I think, Will, we answered that question. Speak something of planting in a town that you were originally from. I think we addressed that, and maybe you missed that earlier on in the recording. Johnny Pollock asks, how has God moved in a way that you didn't expect when you started out planting?
Yeah. Great question. I think what I learned is that a lot of what I had read and learned about church planting was from a city kind of methods. So I thought what we would do in Inverness is we'd go into the middle of Inverness and try to grow a big church from there, and then kind of go from there. And I think over time, I mean, other people saw us quicker than me, but actually God planted us into the west is where we went, because that's where there was need within Inverness. And I still had a kind of center whole Inverness mentality. And actually, I think over time, just God made it clear to me and to others within the church who probably I didn't listen to as quickly as I should have, just that we what needed to focus in on a more particular area. So that's really helped us over the last years since then, to have people moving into this area and living in the same area instead of being more scattered and really not making as big an impact as being in a smaller place. So I think a lot of that was the training I'd had from church planting came from a city, urban center kind of methods, which I was applying into a small town. And actually kind of learning, actually, what does it mean to plant into a part of Inverness rather than the whole thing?
Sure, yeah. Sure. Hey, I got a question from Kenya. Apart from prayer and having faith, did you have a budget for church planting, and how did you raise it? So that's a great question. Yeah. Like, it's not easy to raise money for rural planting. Yeah. How much did you raise, or what percentage of your budget? What did that look like for you?
Yes, we had no budget whatsoever. We moved up, my wife and I. I worked in Starbucks and worked 40 something hours there a week, which is a brilliant way of just getting to know people. I mean, I just got to stand, make coffees and chat to people, which is a really good way of asking questions and doing a lot of demographic kind of research. And then fortunately, my wife is a GP, a family doctor. So she obviously was earning a decent amount of money as well, which is helpful. And then over time, what happened was we had, being part of Acts 29 helped us in that there's a chap called Kirk McDonald in Georgia, who had family roots from Scotland and was looking to plant into Scotland, or looking to support a plant in Scotland, and got pointed in my direction and kind of out with him. So his church started supporting us a little bit, which freed me up for a day or two a week from being in Starbucks. And slowly, so as things progressed, that kind of, I kind of did less at Starbucks. And then when I was over at X29 Global Gathering, Kirk had organized for some of his friends to come and hear the vision and kind of rallied guys in the southeast of Georgia to get behind us. So we have three churches, Tim Bice, Matt Ford, and Kirk McDonald, who all supported us. And that actually freed me by the time they supported. And then we had a core team. So that kind of let me, I think I worked one day in Starbucks anyway, just to let us do it. But we really started from the scratch and just took each step at a time, up to the point where it's only maybe, I think now 3 years. So for the first 2 years of the church, I was still working in Starbucks and the bivocational method. And we've been, I think it's through Acts 29, thanks to the generosity of the guys in the States. That's been really, that's allowed us to, allowed me to kind of go full time as there was more need. But I thought there's massive benefits to the bivocational stuff to start in terms of meeting people, in terms of modeling mission to people within your church, in terms of earning some money through that as well. So yeah, that helped. And I guess the other thing we had is that my parents had moved to South Africa just as we were moving up to Inverness. So they had a house that was sitting empty in Inverness, which we were able to move into, which meant our overheads for us as well weren't as great. And that allowed us to kind of have some time, a couple of years, to think through where we wanted to buy in line with where we were planting a church. So it let kind of vision and that kind of stuff drive that. So it's probably quite unusual. There was a lot of blessing there in that all kind of coming together.
I think every story is going to be a unique story of God's provision, yeah. The timing, being bivocational. One of our goals in the Rural Collective is to make sure people understand bivocational is honorable, and some guys are called to it for life. Yeah. And it's unfair to ask especially a rural planter, oh, you're not full time yet? Are you kidding? Yeah. Bivocational is often more work than just being.
Totally. Yeah. You're working 40 hours at Starbucks and trying to prep a sermon and meet. I mean, I had it that I would meet with people I'd work at like an 8 hour shift, and I'd meet someone before, someone on my half hour break, and then meetings after. Whereas now it feels like, I remember when it started, I was saying, I feel like a fraud in that I've got time to just felt a lot easier being full time. But that's because of the generosity of the guys in the States, who I should say, if you want to see a model for brotherhood and sisterhood, those guys, I mean, are way ahead. I spent time there last summer, and it's great to learn from them what they've been doing in Southeast Georgia. Just a brilliant
Southeast book. Or Southwest? Is it Southwest Georgia or Southeast? Well, I know it's South Georgia. I think it's Southwest Georgia, but
Albany, London, those places.
In fact, I want to do a shout out to Tim Bison, the guys down there, because they are a model of what a healthy rural cohort looks like. Yeah. And I think they're going to have a book out for us at some point here.
Yeah, I need to get involved with that book.
Yeah.
If that's not done yet, guys.
No. That's all right. Us guys in the rural settings don't have time to sit around and write books, right? No.
That's true.
But here, that's another picture. We got to close up here, but there's the idea that rural churches, especially in the West, can help support churches, rural churches. And so our brother from Kenya, one of our, one of the jobs I hope to, or one of the tasks I hope to promote is how to better connect guys like Pete and Inverness and our brother Muleli Cleophas down in Kenya. How to connect across the globe.
Yeah. Because I know, like, from time I've had in South Africa with family and stuff there, a pound goes a long way in some parts of the world. It doesn't go so far in other places, but actually small churches could do a lot with supporting churches in some parts of the world. And I think we all can do a part in that.
Great, yeah. Hey, any last words to brothers and sisters watching?
I think it's just a word of encouragement to press on, to keep going, to that long, slow plod, a glorious plod. Just keep going. Keep looking to Jesus and trusting him.
And we're going to end with this little dilemma, but it's simply answered. Once you're on the gospel, nobody's, are you no longer a nobody? And the answer is you're still a nobody. It's still about Jesus and for his glory. And thanks, Pete, for your time. We love you, brother, and our best to Ann. And thank you guys for joining us, and we hope you found this encouraging. Stay tuned for next month sometime. God bless.
Cheers.